I went to Campo San Fantin half an hour before the meeting and found a somber gathering of Venetians filing past the Fenice in silent mourning. Two carabinieri, or policemen, stood guard in front, smartly dressed in dark blue suits with rakish red stripes along the trouser seams. They were smoking cigarettes. At first glance, the Fenice looked just as it always had, the formal portico, the Corinthian columns, the ornamental iron gates, the windows and balustrades, all completely intact. But of course, this was just the facade, and the facade was all there was. The Fenice had become a mask of itself. Behind the mask, the interior had been reduced to a pile of rubble. The crowd in front of the Fenice drifted across the Campo to the Ateneo Veneto for the town meeting. The great hall was already filled to overflowing. People stood at the rear and along the sides of the room while the speakers milled around nervously in front. The audience buzzed with conversation and conjecture. A woman standing near the door turned to another woman. "There are no accidents," she said. "Just wait. You'll see." The other woman nodded in agreement. Two men discussed the middling quality of the Fenice's resident company in recent years, especially the orchestra. "It's a shame the Fenice had to burn," one said to the other. "A pity it wasn't the orchestra." A young woman, arriving at the hall out of breath, made her way toward a young man who had saved a seat for her. "I haven't told you where I was the night of the fire," she said as she slipped into her seat. "I was at the cinema. The Accademia was showing Senso, can you believe it, the only movie that has a scene shot inside the Fenice. Visconti made it look like the 1860s, so it was lit by gas lamps, little fires inside the Fenice. Then afterward, I came out and saw people running and shouting, 'The Fenice, the Fenice!' I followed them to the Accademia bridge, and then I saw the fire. I thought I was dreaming." Several of the Fenice's immediate neighbors had come to the meeting and were adjusting in various ways to living in the shadow of a ghost. Gino Zeguzzo said that since the fire, his father had been spending most of his time at the glassworks, turning out vases and bowls to commemorate that awful night. "He's made more than 20 so far," he said, "and he continues to prepare more quantities of molten glass. My father said only, 'I have to make them.' And we have no idea when his passion will run its course. But the pieces are beautiful, every one of them." Emilio Baldi, the owner of the Antico Martini restaurant, gloomily estimated the losses he would suffer for the months, if not years, during which the view from his restaurant would be a noisy construction site instead of a lovely square. "There has been one hopeful sign," he said, managing a weak smile. "We had 8 tables of diners when the fire broke out, and, naturally, everybody took their coats and left in a hurry. Since then, 7 of the 8 have come back and insisted on paying their bill. Perhaps that means things will turn out all right eventually." I took a seat beside an elderly English lady who was showing the couple in front of her a little square of painted canvas the size of a postage stamp. It was charred around the edges. "It's a piece of scenery," the lady said. "Isn't it sad?" "We found it on our Altana," her husband chimed in. "We live at Palazzo Cini, and we're having dinner at the Monaco." Suddenly, the waiters seemed distracted and went away from the dining room. We asked if there was anything wrong, and they told us there seemed to be a fire near the Fenice. We went up to the roof of the Saturnia Hotel, which has a splendid view of the Fenice. The fire was right in front of us, so close that Marguerite's fur coat was singed. A little while later, as we walked home, clouds of sparks blew overhead. "Terrifying," said his wife. "The next morning, our Altana was covered in ash. Christopher found this little square of burnt canvas. It had blown all the way across the Grand Canal." She wrapped the charred relic in a handkerchief and put it back in her purse. "I don't suppose we shall ever know what opera it came from."